Dearest listener, welcome to A Bridgerton Podcast, a weekly show dissecting the Bridgerton family and the ongoings of the rest of the ton, presented by Mr. Ben Butler and the Right Honourable Robbie Christmas. May God have mercy on your souls.
Thank you to Lord Whistledown for that lovely intro. Hey, Robbie, how are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Did you see that Bridgerton has become the biggest show of all time on Netflix, which essentially means of all time ever?
Of all time? Like
the most viewed, like, I think it's like 70 plus million people. Netflix has seen like a bunch of new subscriber growth. Like, people are joining the platform just to
really
watch Bridgerton. Yeah.
Wow, good for Shondaland, you know?
And good for us, I guess. Like, we can just press that wave.
Yeah, well, you will hopefully see with, you know, new audience growth for the show, you'll also see it for us.
Yeah, there's a question of, like, causation, correlation there, right? Like, you know, like, during the week, Nicola Coughlan, who plays Penelope, was tweeting about how, you know, after, like, a month after its release, Bridgerton was back at number one in the U.S., Kim Kardashian was like tweeting about watching Bridgerton, and if you look at our audience growth, like, a lot of it is in the US, so I think we are partly responsible for the resurgence of the show.
I think so.
I like how, like,
you said that so seriously too.
I know. I like how you'd either like accepted or rejected the bit. You're just like, yeah, that seems valid.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, I tweeted like the screenshot of Kim Kardashian. I tweeted the screenshot of like number one in the US, and I tweeted like our podcast analytics, where like the most of our growth has been in like our largest audiences in the US.
Yeah.
And someone commented underneath being like, "How did you get these figures?" I didn't want to spoil it for them, so I just left it. So Bridgerton is Netflix's biggest show, and we got our first bit of press, which is nice. So thanks to her.ie for the feature. Ireland's largest website for women and for other people, I guess, but it's primarily focused for the female market.
That's awesome. Yeah, thank you to her for doing that article on us. Where can they find it? We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, we can put it in the show notes. If you search Bridgerton podcast in Google, click in the little news column. I think it's the first thing that comes up.
Great.
Look at us ranking on Google. All about that SEO. So today we're going to focus on episode 7, which is Oceans Apart, which I guess is a pretty apt title for you and I, Robbie, considering we are recording this at least one
ocean apart.
I guess many oceans apart, I guess, depending which way you'd want to go. Like, yeah. You would fly over the Atlantic and maybe like touch off the Pacific where you are.
Yeah.
Do you want to give us a rundown of episode 7 and your kind of thoughts there?
Yeah, episode 7. Yeah, this one starts out pretty intense. A weird sort of battle of the bands happening between Daphne and Simon. Daphne, yeah. Turns out, is a virtuoso pianist, which I didn't know. Nope. They're kind of doing this war back and forth where she keeps playing louder and opening the windows, and then he keeps shooting. I mean, so
the metaphor for a dysfunctional relationship is coming across pretty strong here.
Yeah, absolutely. So Daphne, I feel like they kind of gloss over the fact that she's just like when we watch her earlier in the season playing piano, We're led to believe like she's playing kind of pretty mundane, like simple parts, and it's just a hobby for her. And then when we see her on piano, I'm like, holy crap, like she can actually play. So
I guess she really just channels her emotion, because the turning point earlier for her in piano was her sort of sexual revolution and discovering masturbation. Like, she went from like chords to playing, and now like she seems to be channeling her rage for Simon through music.
That's beautiful. Okay, so Simon and Daphne are not doing well, as we left it in at the end of episode 6. Daphne finds out that Simon has been dishonest He's been lying to her about the real reason why he doesn't want to have kids. It's not that he can't. It's that he doesn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, I will not let you out of my sight until I find out whether or not you are with child, which is kind of crazy considering that's like basically something that his father, late father, would have said and kind of did say already.
Yeah, like it's this weird idea of like, and there's like a scene later in the episode where he just kind of like, Daphne wakes up in the morning and checks her sheets and Simon just kind of wordlessly like lurks in the door and then leaves again.
Yeah.
It's very odd. And then at dinner, they're like talking through the servants in this really kind of like childlike way of like, you know, it's like if you and I were in a fight and I'm like, you know, talking to the servants, you'd be like, oh, like tell Robbie that he's an idiot and all this sort of stuff, which like, it's so weird.
Yeah, that's a common, I don't know if trope is the right word for it, but like people don't do that in real life, right?
And the poor servant is there like, do you want me to say that?
Yeah, that's right. The servant's like, you want me? All right. Anyway, so later on, Eloise and Lady Bridgerton are at Madame Delacroix's place, and mm-hmm. Eloise kind of comes to this realization that Lady Whistledown can easily restore a reputation just as much as she can destroy one.
Mm-hmm.
So she's kind of realizing that Lady Whistledown is not entirely, you know, a rumor monger.
Yeah, she's not just a destructive force. She could be a constructive force as well.
So we see Eloise as she's trying to unravel who Lady Whistledown is, the true identity. So Daphne seems a little bit different. She comes back to London to kind of stand in and help out because of what's going on with Colin and Marina. Daphne pulls Colin aside and agrees to arrange a rendezvous between Marina and Colin and that she will chaperone. But hey, here's some good news. We get more shirtless boxing.
Yes.
Simon and Will are boxing again without shirts.
Mm-hmm.
And they are just swinging at each other. And Will can tell that Simon's got, you know, he's got something on his mind. He's definitely trying to take it out in fighting.
Yeah.
You know, in my notes too, I have it written down that Daphne and Simon, as if we didn't know it already, they are horrible communicators.
Oh yeah, that scene when they're like on the stairs, like it starts off with Daphne says something about with God knows who, and then Simon responds with whom, like correcting her grammar, and I was like, fuck off, you guys have so much more problems than like whether Daphne uses who or whom. Like, you understood, like this is the one time you guys had a conversation where you're actually saying words the other person understands. Don't, you know, cut someone off because they've used like, you've so many more basic communication issues than like a misstep in like, I hated it, and then like and then like this happens, and then he, you know, it goes from like 0 to 100 as always. He starts like going down on her, and it's just this like classic like trauma bond scenario where it's like, you guys have so many basic things to work out, but because you don't have the capacity or desire to actually do that right now, you're just like, oh, let's just fuck, I guess. And like,
they take their aggression out on each other with sex. So they end up having sex on the staircase.
Or, yeah, just a sort of a...
or, I guess...
An oral situation, I suppose.
Yeah, he...
They absolutely would if a main plot point wasn't, you know, the big we shouldn't have sex
right
thing. Yeah.
All right, so there's a what appears to be a garden party happening later, and Daphne runs into Lady Danbury, who invites her to a party for the married ladies.
Mm-hmm.
At this party, we have all the key players. We got the Bridgerton family, and we have the Queen is not there. Is she?
No. No, the Queen is at the...
It's the Queen's garden party.
It's the Queen's garden party, yeah.
Yeah, so she is there. The Queen is there. And the Featherington family shows up, which is kind of outrageous considering that this big piece of news, this big scandal broke directly involving the Featheringtons and how they tried to cheat the Bridgerton family.
I love how fully you've bought into the world of the show that you have been like, and it's outrageous that after this scandal that they turn up at the garden party.
It's ridiculous. The audacity.
How dare they?
I get heated about it. I'm just like, dude, honestly, it pisses me off, dude. It's like, where do you get off?
Yeah, no, you're spot on. And there's another classic, like, I know it's becoming a bit of a trope of this podcast of me going after the queen, but like, she has another like classic inappropriate queen remark where she just comes up to Daphne and out of nowhere goes, I have 100 guineas that there'll be a Hastings heir within the year. Just like,
oh, I know.
I'm betting on your fertility. Like, please make sure you fuck more.
Yeah.
And then like, and then goes directly to, again, Eloise, who's also a teenager, and starts interrogating her. And I'm like,
I know. Oh yeah. Well, that's, yeah, we'll get to that part. So the Featheringtons show up with the daughters and tries to apologize to Lady Bridgerton, but she's not having it. She's clearly, and for good reason, upset.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lady Featherington gets kicked out of the party by the queen. So later on, Mr. Featherington comes to convince Will to throw his next match to win.
Yeah, like Lord Featherington comes in and he's like on this very much like, you know, end of the party, like coked up kind of energy, being like, we should start an app kind of pulls off him.
Coked up energy, like we should start an app energy. It's so true. It's not too different from the idea that we had about making a podcast.
Yeah, it was pretty close to
Dude,
it.
We should make a Bridgerton podcast.
That's what the world needs now.
You know what people need?
Two guys talking about a like
a period piece.
Period piece. Yeah, like Lord Featherington, like obviously he has his gambling issues, but like he's just like a very funny character to me. Like he just comes up with the dumbest, and like the plan itself is very dumb, but the execution of it is even worse. So we can get to that later. But like, yeah, it's just very much just like, hey man, like
he's an interesting character. He's very much a weak, sort of weaselly character. Anthony visits Simon in the drawing room and starts drinking because he thought he saw Sienna.
Yeah.
The opera singer that he had a fling with.
Again, projecting of like both of them throwing it back at each other. Like Simon is projecting his own daddy issues onto Anthony. And then, yeah, I thought like in the punch up that ensues, Anthony does surprisingly well, like considering like Simon trains like pretty regularly, it seems, with a professional boxer and is in great shape. And as we've discussed, like, you know, Anthony seems to not sleep or eat anything. And running on, it seems like basically just rage, holds his own against Simon, who's like not only in great shape, but like, you know, every time you see him, he's boxing like a punching bag or like, you know, the person who's widely considered to be one of the greatest boxers, you know, in the game. So fair play to Anthony for stepping up there.
Yeah, he could handle his own for sure. He slams him on a table too, full on, just like WWF wrestling moment, you know.
Fully pivot this podcast into just a Bridgerton / WWF crossover meme page.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Later on, Simon is healing his wounds when Daphne comes in to help. They start making out again.
Just a really really unhealthy
dancing
abuse
around the issue. She's also not really helping him. She's just kind of like dabbing it, and then they start pressing foreheads, and my first thought was like, you're gonna get blood on your forehead.
Just pushing the glass further into his brain. Yeah, like I felt triggered by this scene, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like it just set up this sort of almost like dynamic of like a drunk husband comes in to a wife that he's abusive to, and like she tends to his wounds even though like he is also like abusive to her, and it just like I really didn't like it. But of course, yeah, they immediately start like kissing, because that's how they deal with all of their repressions. And then Simon, yeah, comes clean about the, you know, reason why he can't / won't have kids, which sounds like so infantile when he actually vocalizes it. And like, Daphne, to your point, is very much like, she calls him out on it, and
he does this thing where he very much, and now I'm not saying Daphne is without fault, but the way Simon interacts with her, especially when she tries to bring this stuff up with him, it's like she's trying.
Yeah.
Like every single time she's the one trying to bring this up, not him. And then he does this thing where he gaslights her, and so she'll start it and she says, why won't you open up to me? And he goes, Daphne, And that right there frustrates me because it's like, stop.
Yeah.
No, I'm not being outrageous because I want to connect with you, you mm-hmm. know? And he, you know what I mean? Like, he's gaslighting her by going, Daphne, like, just that, just saying her name like that carries this tone of you're overreacting.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Daphne is ill-informed, and, like, that is, and she quite rightly, like, calls Lady Bridgerton out on that earlier, I think, in the episode, where, yeah, she basically says to her mom, like, hey, you, like, didn't prep me for this, yeah. which is valid. And I think Daphne has her, like, you know, the sexual intercourse that she has with Simon, she stays on. I think that's, like, that's a bad call, and she has made some, like, mistakes and does some bad things. But yeah, I think, like, out of the two of them, like, Simon is definitely the more villainous character in the relationship, and definitely, yeah, I think poisons the well in what they have.
Yeah, that's well put. So Simon ends up saying it cannot be undone, which is like, really? Nobody's deciding that but you.
Yeah.
Like, you made this oath. And we can get into that, I guess, later, but like this whole oath that he's made is like almost showing more respect to his father than he realizes. Right? Yeah. Like, I promised. When you promise somebody something, 9 times out of 10, mm-hmm. you're doing it to honor them. You're doing it to respect them by holding up a promise.
Yeah, I think that the promise thing is a good point. I think to add some, like, context to it, like, in that era, sort of a gentleman's word was, like, the main thing he had. So mm-hmm. it is a little bit more selfish, but I do think the philosophical and logical extension of what you're saying is true. And Daphne calls him out on that, where he's like, or she says to him, like, okay, you made a promise to your, you know, a vow to your father on his deathbed, but you made a sort of vow to me and have sort of betrayed me in the marriage bed, conveniently forgetting that she betrayed him in the marriage bed as well. But, like, yes, leaving that aside for a second, like, I think you're right in terms of it's causing more harm to him than, you know, his father, who's now dead, and it right. doesn't make any difference to.
Anyway, Penelope and Eloise are discussing Lady Whistledown, and I'm pretty sure, I think Penelope is Lady Whistledown.
Okay.
Because they are, and I know you've seen this, so you can't see anything yet, but mm-hmm. I think Penelope is Lady Whistledown because she's just constantly trying to change the subject or never says enough.
Yeah.
And the fact that Eloise isn't picking up on that is astonishing to me. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Anthony pulls Colin aside, apologizes to him in a weird sort of way. Again, lack of communication. It's like, I'm sorry, not sorry.
Yeah. Again, like, just fully talking to themselves, and
right,
you know, the other person just happens to be there. Like, they're saying, like, Anthony's saying things to Colin that, like, he just is realizing himself, I think.
Right. Yep. Exactly. Okay. So Lady Bridgerton and Eloise are getting ready to present herself as a eligible mm-hmm. bachelorette.
It's sort of like a little pre-debut, sort of like a little foot in the water of
right
the next season.
And so she's getting dressed up, and there's a concert or a play, I couldn't figure mm-hmm. out which one, but there's a live event happening later on, and everybody's going to it, and Benedict sees Sir Granville and asks him why he does what he does. He mm-hmm. doesn't understand the situation with him and his wife. He questions him, and Sir Granville says it takes courage living outside of the expectations of society. I respect his courage. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like Mr. Granville a lot. Like, and there's a comment, I believe, in that scene where he's like, oh, like, do you know what it's like to be in a room with the person you love and be oceans apart or something? I think that's actually
that's right, yep.
That I was reading up, there's like a, I'm not on TikTok, and you can be our TikTok expert here, but there's a TikTok Bridgerton musical, and I think one of the original songs was inspired by that line. So I guess we can check in on the musical another time, but yeah, people are working on
we could put the link in the show notes,
putting on a Bridgerton musical, it's partly inspired by that line, which I thought was quite beautiful.
Oh, I didn't know about that. I'll have to go check that out, because I am on TikTok. RX Robbie, I'll put it in the show notes. So the Queen fires Eloise 1 week after she got hired.
The Queen is the worst.
And, like, she really is.
I will happily have this as the hill that I die on. I've said it time and time again. Maybe we can do some supercut of me just like taking the queen to town. But again, like the queen rages that her lunch didn't make the cut in Lady Whistledown. So therefore, like, totally flips the script of biggest Lady Whistledown fan to the, you know, detriment of all her other, you know, responsibilities. And now when her garden party didn't get a mention in the Gazette, she's like, okay, well, we're shutting this shit down now.
We're taking her down.
It's very much the, like, oh, like, you know, the kid who has the soccer ball, and then, like, they're losing, so it's like, I'm taking my ball and going home, like, game's over. Like, that's exactly what the queen does here. Yep. And then she's an absolute dick to Eloise, who, again, is, like, 14, 15 years old, maybe? Mm-hmm. I just don't like her.
No, I don't blame you. I get that. I mean, she's scattered. She's unorganized. But here's the good news. Eloise and Benedict, they leave the play
early. Yeah, the concert. Yep.
Yeah, and they make a quick pit stop and pick up Madame Delacroix, and they're sitting in the carriage, and Eloise is like, well, wait a second. Maybe Madame Delacroix is Lady Whistledown. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so at the play, Anthony is there up in the...
Oh, in the box?
Yeah, he's in the box, yeah. Watching, and then he looks down and he sees Sienna sitting with the most hipster-looking dude I have ever seen before. He is the epitome of every bartender you will see in Seattle, Washington.
I had exactly the same response. I think it was in episode 8. I had like my notes as like, it looks like he's cosplaying Bridgerton in the show. Like, it's like, looks like he's gone to like Burning Man, but taken a sort of a like Bridgerton, like steampunk kind of like costume.
Yeah, I was looking to make sure he didn't have gauges in his ears. Because no shame. I just thought it was like I some of my good friends look like that, but
it's a fine look, but a weird casting for.
He did not look like. I thought they were really pushing like, like what realistically would have existed back then, you know?
Yeah.
So
and there's some good ways that they do that, you know, by bringing in like racial diversity and stuff.
Absolutely.
Like, I don't think, you know, the Seattle bartender demographic was important enough to maybe insert into the show, but perhaps there was a creative reason for that.
There are a couple different names that guy could have had. I felt like it could have easily been something like Matt, you know, like he looks like maybe a Matt or
I think Matt is perfect. I think we should call him Matt.
Matt, yeah, we'll call him Matt. Meanwhile, Marina is making some sort of concoction to try and kill herself or the baby or both.
Yeah. I paused this frame by frame this time around, and because a lot of the labels are visible, so I got her recipe.
Oh.
If you want it.
Yeah, sure. What is it?
It's juniper berries, which is partly used to make gin. Dandelions. The next one is kind of covered, but it looks like it's like dried something. I think it might be dried cloves. And then the last one was some sort of flowers or poppies, I believe. They didn't show the label for that one. But yeah, that was what was put in her tea.
That just sounds disgusting. It doesn't sound like it. Like,
don't make that at home, kids.
No. I wonder where she got the idea that that was going to be successful.
I was curious as well. Like, does she have some sort of like potion spell book? Daphne, you know, getting her period at the concert. Like, obviously it's particularly, you know, traumatic with everything that's going on and the like importance riding on that pregnancy. Yeah, earlier she presented the options of like, oh, taking what Simon said will either be, you know, miserable together or perfectly happy apart.
Right.
And I saw that and I was like, you guys should break up. Like, this is not a, like, neither of those are good options.
Yeah. Which is, it's just crazy to think about like the timeline of how dysfunctional this relationship is. Like, all of the things that we're seeing have taken place over like the last like couple of weeks. Like, this isn't like they've had a year. This is like maybe a month of like the up and down, maybe a mm-hmm. little bit more than that since they first met, but like the whole drama, will they, won't they, and then the lack of communication and everything happening with their family. This is all taken like maybe a month. Like, this is exhausting.
I'm trying to pull it up here. I think I saw it on Instagram from some like psychology page I follow. They had basically just like the, oh yeah, here it is. toxic relationship versus healthy relationship. Toxic relationship. The relationship starts with instant attraction and irresistible chemistry. Tick. Number two, the connection is highly physical and sexual. Tick. Number three, the relationship cycles through extreme highs and lows. Tick. Four, important conversations are avoided. Tick. Number five, the relationship feels like an addiction that you're powerless to quit. Tick. They have every tenet of a toxic relationship. And like, I know that this is how, like, you know, like Hollywood has, like, you know,
they romanticize it.
The wrong thing.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that Daphne and Simon's relationship is toxic or unhealthy.
It is. It is. But it doesn't mean that it's always going to be that way.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like the bits that we see, you know, like in this sort of world, like, are really bad, and like it has the potential to get good, and we see it.
Yeah.
When it's spoilers, like, it does go that way, but I'm worried about young people watching this.
Yeah.
And thinking that this is what I should aim for, or strive for.
Yes, that's been a problem for a while. Obviously, you know, we know that this isn't the first time we've seen this trope, this dynamic. This is, like you said, this is something that's been in Hollywood for ages, where they romanticize dysfunctional relationships because they show that the intoxication of the instability in a relationship has a greater payoff than that of a relationship that has established boundaries and healthy communication. That's not easy. Like, people don't want to read that or watch that.
Yeah.
Because it's not as dramatic. But I agree. I worry about people watching this thinking that this is more of the good girl going after the bad guy. And it's just so intoxicating how unhealthy it is. The ups and downs, it just makes it so much worth it, and it makes it sexier. And it's like, to be honest, if you're in a relationship with somebody like that, where all of those boxes are ticked, all the unhealthy boxes are ticked, it doesn't create the intimacy that you think and that they present it as. It's actually very surface level, because nothing is better than being with someone and being able to connect with them and fully trust them. But there's no trust in this relationship. And that's where they go wrong, because they make it look like it's just this passionate affair. It's actually fairly one-dimensional, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, like, I fully agree. And I know that this isn't the first and won't be the only, like, production that shows relationships in this way. I think it is quite at the far end of, like, every box is ticked. Like, they're like 5 for 5, 100% on that admittedly random Instagram page, but like based on like good research, like unhealthy, toxic relationship. And the thing that I'm concerned is, like, having been in like a situation like that before, like, we associate like love and attraction and all those kind of feelings with essentially just a heightened nervous system. Like, like the idea of like, oh, like, I just, you know, didn't get that spark. Like, a spark is either a recognition of a prior attraction pattern that you've had for someone, or it's like triggering some sort of attachment style in you that maybe isn't good for you. And I'm worried about people who watch this show and have those human, you know, natural impulses and things that we have to like unlearn.
Yes.
You can still have like love and excitement and passion.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to come with this like fear and anxiety that we think it does.
I couldn't have put it better myself. I totally agree with that.
So no jokes in that bit, but I guess just like some important stuff, I think.
Hero of the episode.
I would say my hero for the episode is going to be, I think, Penelope, because she ends up saving Marina.
Yeah, interesting. I had Eloise and Colin.
Oh, okay.
Do you want to give any commentary on that, or should we just be like,
no,
cool, that checks out?
I don't want to give any explanation. No, I think Penelope, because she, despite everything that she's been through with Marina, she's still cares about her.
Yeah.
And when she comes in the room, she very quickly tries to get things together to like save her life. I thought that was when push comes to shove, she's going to do the right thing.
Yep.
So I thought that was really cool. What about you?
In terms of heroes?
Yeah.
Colin, for me, again, notwithstanding the potential cynical reading of it, I think he, for someone quite young, handles the marine situation well. I think, it's just sort of a gentleman about it. So he takes it for me.
Villain of the episode.
Villain of the episode. I think Lord Featherington.
Mm.
Because he's clearly doing something that is immoral and unethical. And he's putting a good man in a position to have to choose what matters to him. And I just think it's gross.
Yeah, I had Daphne and Simon down as their relationship is sort of the conceptual villain of this episode. Mainly, I think, perpetrated by Simon.
Yeah.
And then I think the Queen is just awful.
Yeah, there was a very limited period of time where I actually respected the Queen, and it was when she visited the King. And I felt for her, but ever since then and after, before and after that, I've been like, oh, you just suck.
Yeah. Okay. So that's episode 7. Robbie, is there anything else you wanted to touch on for this week?
No, I'm really excited to talk about the finale.
Mm. Yeah. One thing for me was just in a continuation of the Bridgerton effect, since December, there's been a 300% increase in 4-poster beds. Which are all the Bridgerton style beds with the sort of poles and curtains around them. Mm. Courses have gone up even on property websites in the UK. All the top viewed properties are all these kind of Bridgerton-esque kind of manners. So people are just very much really retreating physically and psychologically, I think, into the world of Bridgerton, which has its pros and potentially has its cons. That's everything from us on episode 7. I guess we...
Do you want me to do it? I'll do it.
Yeah, you can close this out.
As usual, please tell a friend if you're using Apple Podcasts and listening to us on there. Please leave us a review and a rating. We would greatly appreciate it. And don't forget, on Spotify, there's a way to share it on your Instagram story. And just keep listening. We appreciate all the fans. And as we come to a conclusion for the season... we will still continue doing our episodes and catching up, talking about the Tawn and what we think is going to happen in season 2. So,
see you then.
All right.
Well, there you have it. Another episode of a Bridgerton podcast. Simply marvelous as ever. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app and tell a friend. Until next time, ta-ta. Thank you.